Coming up is the news.
Tehran denies Al Arabiya's false claim that the US has rejected all conditions set by Iran in its comments on a EU draft to revive the JCPOA. Rocket attacks target two military bases hosting US occupation forces in the eastern Syrian province of Deir al-Zor, leaving three service members injured. The lawyer of a Palestinian inmate who has been on a hunger strike in an Israeli jail for over 160 days says he could die at any moment. Hello and welcome to World News. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Tehran has denied Saudi-owned Al Arabiya news channel's claims that the US has rejected all conditions set by Iran in its comments on a European Union draft proposal. The EU draft aims to restore the 2015 deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. Iran's official IRNA news agency quoted an informed source as rejecting Al Arabiya's report as, quote, untrue. The source added that the Saudi channel has tried to justify the report by mixing its claims with certain phrases from the text of the JCPOA. An advisor to Iran's negotiating team in the JCPOA revival talks also denied Al Arabiya's report as completely false. Mohammad Marandi said, Iran has just begun studying the US response and will inform the EU coordinator afterwards. Earlier on Wednesday, Tehran said it has received Washington's response to its comments on EU's draft proposal. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the country has started assessing US opinions and will deliver its final thoughts to the EU coordinator. The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization calls on the UN nuclear watchdog to avoid Israel's baseless claims about Tehran's nuclear activities. Mohammad Islami was referring to a recent remark by the IAEA chief, Rafael Grossi, had said that Iran needs to provide explanation for traces of enriched uranium at undeclared sites. Islami said the comment is a repetition of Israel's unfounded claims. He said Tel Aviv is waging a psychological and political warfare against Tehran, which is intended for derailing talks to revive the 2015 deal. Islami noted that the Islamic Republic abides by the NPT and is committed to the IAEA's safeguards agreements. He also said that Iran remains committed to inspections only within the framework of the JCPOA. Earlier, political commentator Margaret Flowers joined us with her take on the fate of the JCPOA, as well as Iran's call for the UN nuclear watchdog not to raise Israeli allegations against its nuclear program.
So this would be somewhat of a political win for Joe Biden's administration. to be successful in its negotiations, reaching an agreement for its voter base at a time when the administration is really not faring well in terms of public opinion. But the way that the United States is spinning this is that we're the strong ones. We're taking a hard line. We're forcing Iran, you know, to make concessions and trying to make Iran look weak. In terms of Israel, I'm sure that there are times when Israel is useful as an ally to the United States, and other times when the U.S. weighs that political calculus and may upset the Israeli state. But this may be one of those situations. We would love to see many of the international bodies like the IAEA and others actually focus on their mission and their task and not bring the politics into the situation. The world would be a much better place if we were a more reality-based and international law, abiding world.
Elsewhere, two military bases hosting U.S. occupation forces in the eastern Syrian province of Deir al-Zawar have come under rocket attacks. Syria's official Sana'a news agency quoted local sources as saying several rockets fell inside the two military bases of the U.S. located at Al-Omar and Conoco oil fields in the countryside of Deir al-Zawar. The sources said the attacks were followed by plumes of smoke rising from the bases. According to a U.S. military statement, one service member suffered minor injuries in the attacks and two others were being evaluated for minor injuries as well. U.S. military aircraft conducted flights over the area of the attacks. The new attacks came after the U.S. military carried out airstrikes on eastern Syria on Tuesday, claiming it hit facilities used by Iran-linked fighters there. Iran has slammed the latest U.S. airstrikes as a breach of Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Tehran has also denied U.S. military claims that its targets were Iran-linked groups. Moving on to the plight of the Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, an inmate who has been on hunger strike for over 160 days in protest at his detention without charge could die at any moment. That's according to his lawyer. Khalil Awada's lawyer says his client has subsisted only on water since he started his hunger strike in March. Israeli forces arrested him last December and have since held him without charge or trial, a practice known as administrative detention. He is one of the Palestinian prisoners who have gone on a prolonged hunger strike in protest at Israel's so-called administrative detention policy. Human rights groups say the policy denies prisoners due access, due process, and is aimed at quashing opposition to Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories. The U.S. announces a new batch of military aid to Ukraine worth about $3 billion. This is the largest single tranche of support for Kiev since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war in February.
The United States of America is committed to supporting the people of Ukraine as they continue the fight to defend their sovereignty. As part of that commitment, I'm proud to announce our biggest tranche of security assistance to date, approximately $2.98 billion of weapons and equipment to be provided through the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative.
Joe Biden's announcement of the military aid package comes as Ukraine marks its Independence Day 6 months after Russia launched its military offensive there. The latest package will push the total amount of military assistance Washington has offered to Ukraine since the war broke out to nearly $14 billion. Russia has repeatedly warned against the consequences of arms supply to Ukraine. Moscow says the shipments add fuel to the fire of the war and prolong it further. A kill list website belonging to a Ukrainian ultra-nationalist group comes under the spotlight as it has published a photo of Russian journalist recently killed in an explosion near Moscow. Several other people have already been put on the website's kill list. We discussed the issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen to what our guests had to say.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The Ukilis website of a Ukrainian ultra-nationalist group has published a photo of a Russian journalist recently killed in an explosion, declaring that she was murdered. Mitrovorets shows a picture of Daria Dugina with the caption, "Liquidated." Daria, daughter of a prominent Russian philosopher, was killed in a car bomb blast outside of Moscow on Saturday. Russia has blamed Ukraine's special services for her assassination. The website has also placed British musician Roger Waters on its list. Waters has recently criticized the U.S. president of NATO for fueling the conflict in Ukraine. Press TV correspondent Johnny Miller is also on the list. The reporter has recently revealed Ukrainian atrocities against pro-Russia civilians in the Donbas region. Fred Weir, journalist and political commentator, joins us from Moscow. We also have Wilmer Leon, columnist and political scientist, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome to you both. Fred Weir, let me first start with you. Do you believe that with her name being described in the way that it was on this kill list, in terms of her being liquidated, that when you see that, who do you blame or who do you hold accountable for her assassination?
That I do not know. These are kind of separate issues. The Miratvorets website is curated by Ukrainian secret services, but it's a kind of propaganda device. It looks like a kill list, and it's certainly a hate list. I'm not sure there is a connection between the actual murder of Daria Dugina and whatever it happens on the Miratvorets list. I just don't know. There's an information war going on, and a lot of really, really vicious things, a lot of disinformation, a lot of war propaganda. On the other hand, the woman was definitely murdered the other day here in Moscow, or just outside the city. Someone did it. There are conflicting theories about it. But I'm not qualified to point a finger. I think it's lost so far in the murk, and it's the subject of all this hate-filled propaganda.
Well, Wilmer Leon, one of the things that Russia has actually said time and again, and has stated to be one of the reasons actually that it went after Ukraine, in some sense, though it wasn't at the top of the list, was going after these extremists or ultra-nationalists. The description is varied, but I'm curious what you think about the type of influence that they, first of all, the role they play, in what percentage in Ukrainians, either security forces, and then whether they do actually influence the Ukrainian President Zelensky on matters.
I don't know the percentage that they play. I will say that they are a very, very dangerous element within the Ukrainian government. I believe that they are a very influential element within the Ukrainian government. I believe that Zelensky is afraid of crossing their path, for he does not want to go the same way as Ms. Dugina has gone. And I think it's also important to understand the role that the United States and United States funding and aid is playing in a lot of this. If you read Scott Ritter's piece, where he talks about Andriy Shapovalov, a Ukrainian civil servant, head of the Ukraine Center for Countering Disinformation, he published a list of 72 names of people that he believed were deliberately spreading disinformation. And this organization is supported by the United States State Department. So there are linkages between these types of actions, whether they're the group that you mentioned at the top of the discussion, whether they're the Ukraine Center for Countering Disinformation. These organizations have links to the United States. Taxpayer dollars are paying, and some of my friends are on this list, like Ray McGovern and Scott Ritter and Caleb Maupin. Responsible journalists, all they're doing is telling the truth, and they are labeled information terrorists. That violates the First Amendment of the United States.
Thank you very much for that. That's Wilmer Leon, columnist and political scientist from Washington, D.C. Fred Weir, thank you so much. Journalist and political commentator from Moscow. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
Elsewhere, UN Food Agency says the number of people facing acute food insecurity worldwide has more than doubled since 2019. The World Food Programme has blamed the COVID-19 pandemic, conflict and climate change for the rapid spread of food insecurity across the globe. The UN agency says before the pandemic broke out, 135 million suffered from acute hunger worldwide. According to the WFP, the figure has increased to 345 million since then and will rise further due to climate change and conflict. The economic crisis in the Eurozone may only be getting started, with the data showing a slowdown of recession-level proportions. For many, the question is not for how many seasons will the bloc be in recession, but for how many years. Ramin Mazari has more from Paris.
Evidence continues to mount that France and the Eurozone are facing a long period of recession. French economic output just contracted for the first time in 18 months, with Germany's business activity plunging even deeper. The decline in output and demand has almost too many causes to list. At 6 months into the unrest in Ukraine, Europe's energy import costs have now quadrupled. The costly conflict shows no sign of easing, as Brussels has abandoned diplomatic efforts with Moscow. The current drought across the continent appears to be the worst in the last 500 years, hurting crop yields, sparking wildfires, and increasing pessimism. That's helped push the euro to its lowest level in 20 years. The euro is now worth less than the United States dollar.
There are obviously many crises which are causing major problems for Europe, and many are linked to what's going on in Ukraine. However, we should not forget the supply chain problems, which began with the coronavirus pandemic, nor the European sovereign debt crisis.
Despite the increase in gloom, last month the European Central Bank decided to raise interest rates for the first time in 11 years. That makes borrowing even more costly for businesses and individuals and could spark mass layoffs, bankruptcies, and home foreclosures. The U.S. has hiked interest rates faster than in Europe, while indicating that more rate increases will arrive soon. Since the Great Recession began, Western central banks have aligned their policies, though they do not move in an exact lockstep. The cost of living crisis is expected to significantly worsen this winter. However, many say a negative outlook for the world's most unstable macroeconomic bloc is more accurately described in years and not just seasons. Analysts say a possible solution to Europe's energy crisis is to implement the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program. However, both Washington and Tel Aviv continue to hinder Europe's ability to protect its own economic interests. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Thanks for joining us.
Limelight. As the impacts of the climate crisis become starker, farmers across the world are rediscovering ancient crops and developing new hybrids that might prove more hardy in the face of drought or epidemics, while also offering important nutrients. We now present you an article written by Cecilia Knoll. The piece is titled Diet for a Hotter Climate: Five Plants That Could Help Feed the World.
Diet
Over the course of human history, scientists believe that humans have cultivated more than 6,000 different plant species. But over time, farmers gravitated towards planting those with the largest yields. Today, just three crops, rice, wheat, and corn, provide nearly half of the world's calories. That reliance on a small number of crops has made agriculture vulnerable to pests, plant-borne diseases, and soil erosion, which thrive on monoculture, the practice of growing only one crop at a time. It has also meant losing out on the resilience other crops show in surviving drought and other natural disasters. As the impacts of the climate crisis become starker, farmers across the world are rediscovering ancient crops and developing new hybrids that might prove more hardy in the face of drought or epidemics, while also offering important nutrients. Chris Smith, founder of the Utopian Seed Project, says, "You hear all the statistics like, we've lost 90% of our varieties. It's only recently that I realized the greatest sadness isn't that we've lost that diversity, it's that we don't even know that we've lost that diversity." Here's a look at five crops beyond rice, wheat, and corn that farmers across the world are now growing in hope of feeding the planet as it warms. Amaranth, the plant that survived colonization. From leaf to seed, the entirety of the amaranth plant is edible. Standing up to 8 feet tall, amaranth stalks are topped off with red, orange, and green seed-filled plumes. Across Africa and Asia, amaranth has long been eaten as a vegetable, whereas indigenous Americans also ate the plant's seed, a pseudo-cereal like buckwheat. While amaranth leaves can be sautéed or cooked in a stir-fry, the seed is commonly toasted and then eaten with honey or milk. A complete protein with all 9 essential amino acids, amaranth is a good source of vitamins and antioxidants. In the Americas, Spanish colonizers banned the Aztecs and Maya from growing amaranth when they arrived on the continent. However, the plant continued to grow as a weed, and many farmers saved amaranth seeds, passing them down for generations, until their descendants were allowed to grow it once again. Today, indigenous farmers in Guatemala, Mexico, and the United States are collaborating to grow this drought-resistant crop. Like fonio, an African grain, amaranth is not a new crop, but one that is experiencing a resurgence as communities adapt to climate crisis. Matthew Blair, a professor at Tennessee State University and co-president of the Amaranth Institute, says, "Everything that's new was old once." Amaranth has found its way into European kitchens as well, with Ukraine coming in as the crop's largest producer on the European continent. Fonio, the drought-resistant traditional grain. For thousands of years, farmers across West Africa have cultivated fonio, a kind of millet that tastes like a slightly nuttier couscous or quinoa. Historically, fonio is considered to be Africa's oldest cultivated cereal and was regarded by some as the food of chiefs or kings. In countries such as Senegal, Burkina Faso, and Mali, fonio would be served on holy days, like at weddings and during the month of Ramadan. Today, attention is increasingly focused on fonio for its resilience and health benefits. As the climate continues to change, fonio's drought resistance and ability to grow in poor soil has made it a standout crop in water-scarce regions. It also has important nutritional value as a low glycemic, glutton-free grain, making it a good source of amino acids for people with diabetes or glutton intolerance. While Europeans once called fonio hungry rice, European companies are now manufacturing their own fonio. the Italian company Oberfood helped introduce Fonio to the European Union in December of 2018. And in the United States, the Senegalese chef Pierre Thiam sources Fonio from the aid organization SOS Sahel for his brand Yolele, also the name of his cookbook celebrating West African cuisine. Cowpeas, the fully edible plant. In the 1940s, more than 5 million acres of cowpeas were grown in the United States, the majority, as their name suggests, for hay to feed livestock. But long before cowpeas, also called southern peas or black-eyed peas, came to the Americas, they were grown for human consumption in West Africa. Although cowpea production has declined in the United States in recent decades, the crop is hugely important in much of Africa. Nigeria is the world's largest cowpea producer. As scientists look for alternative crops, Matthew Blair says, it was important to identify ones where the entire plant is edible. Although historically people have mostly eaten cowpea seeds, the leaves and pods are also a good source of protein. Because cowpeas are highly drought-tolerant, they're also a good candidate as the climate changes. At Tennessee State University, Matthew Blair is part of a team studying the introduction of cowpeas to Latin America as an alternative to beans, like pinto and black beans, with similar flavor profiles that may soon become more difficult to grow. Taro, adapting the tropical crop for colder climates. In the tropics of Southeast Asia and Polynesia, taro has long been grown as a root vegetable, not unlike potato. But as rising temperatures threaten cultivation of the crop in its natural habitat, farmers in the continental United States are trying to adapt the tropical perennial to grow as a temperate annual, because it cannot survive the cold of US winters. At the Utopian Seed Project in North Carolina, founder Chris Smith and his team have been experimenting with tropical crops, looking for ways to help the plants survive the winter in the United States. Today, they're growing 8 varieties of taro, including one sourced from Korea, the Philippines, Hawaii, China, and Puerto Rico. Chris Smith says, "We want to introduce taro because we truly believe that will give us a more secure food system. But the beautiful byproduct is that also allows us to engage with foods that are traditionally from either indigenous or peasant farming communities. And I think it really gives those traditionally underserved populations an opportunity to engage with the food system that they don't usually get. Like fonio, amaranth and cowpeas, taro isn't a new crop, it's just new to the United States food system. Which is why the Utopian Seed Project isn't just learning how to grow taro, but also teaching people how to cook it. Chris Smith says, these crops are just foods that are embedded in cultures around the world in a way that they're not embedded here. He adds, it takes work to build that community and desire for the crop. Kernza, the crop bred for the climate crisis. While many alternative crops are just plants that were grown somewhere else in the world generations ago, others have been cultivated specifically to withstand climate change. In the 1980s, researchers at the Pennsylvania-based Rodale Institute identified a wheat-like grass called intermediate wheatgrass as a perennial cereal crop that could be developed as a substitute for annual grains like wheat. The goal was to minimize the environmental impact of grain production. In 2019, the Kansas-based Land Institute, a non-profit research organization focused on sustainable agriculture, introduced Kernza, a cereal crop developed from intermediate wheatgrass and trademarked to ensure farmers know they've bought seeds from the official breeding program. Although researchers are still working to improve the grain's yield, farmers in Minnesota, in Kansas, and in Montana are today growing nearly 4,000 acres of kernza. Tessa Peters, Director of Crop Stewardship at the Land Institute, says, "Growers immediately understand the benefits of perennials on their landscapes, and for those working in grain-producing areas, kernza is very appealing."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is what the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, says about rashness and haste. "One who rushes madly after inordinate desire runs the risk of encountering destruction and death."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the kindness and affection of our Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we are talking about the kindness and the affection that Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam had. Among the qualities of the father of the martyrs was that he had great affection for the people and offered his help to those who needed his help. He used to reach for the assistance of all those who needed it. And for anyone who sought his refuge, he used to accord to him. In other words, Imam Hussein alayhi salam listened to everyone. Whatever problem you had, he could sit down and listen to you, regardless of your stage of life, regardless of your economic status. He never stood and said, maybe you're a poor person, I cannot listen to you. You're this kind of a person, I cannot listen to you. No, he listened to everyone and took care of everyone according to their needs.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we are talking about the kindness of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. We say that he was very kind. He gave everyone time. He listened to everyone's problem, and he took care of everyone who needed him. He needed his care. So among the obvious examples of the Imam's kindness is the episode concerning Hur ibn Yazid al-Riyahi, who was accompanied with 1,000 soldiers, and they had been sent to confront the Imam alayhi salam. But when they came face to face with the holy Imam alayhi salam, they had already run out of drinking water and were all on the verge of death due to extreme thirst that they faced during the time. When the holy Imam alayhi salam saw their serious condition, he was having sufficient quantities of water with him, and he supplied all of them with water and even provided it to their mounts. Among the forces of Hur was an old man who was so shaking so violently that he could not hold the mouth of the water bag steady to drink the water. So the Imam held the water bag for him and made him steady with his own hands. These actions were the most prominent examples in the culture of humanity that are recorded in the pages of history, and that portray the kindness and the affection that Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam used to have towards the people he used to be leading, towards the people that he lived with during his time of life. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, inshallah. Until next episode, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence fill the air until his brother Abbas said, cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
An inflatable building that explores how people would potentially live on Mars has been unveiled in the British city of Bristol. It's a two-story structure with an area of 570 square feet powered by solar panels. It's designed to cope with temperatures as low as minus 63 degrees Celsius. although the Martian house will be displayed above ground, its lower level will be fully buried to maximize protection against the harsh environment on Mars. Inside, the top floor features a hydroponic living room filled with decorative plants that feed into a circular wastewater system. A team of experts helped develop the design, taking into consideration the complexity of transporting materials to the red planet and what is already there.
So in the gold inflatable structure which you see above you, that's the main living space of the Martian house. It's gold to reflect dangerous solar rays and cosmic radiation, and it's inflatable because it would be filled with a special concrete made of the dust and water that you find on Mars, again to protect you from those dangerous solar and cosmic rays.
The Martian house was envisioned by local artists 7 years ago. The artists also brought together space scientists, architects, engineers, designers, and even school children. The space-age dwelling explores what a house on Mars could be like and is meant to for research and experiments about the future. The major objective of the project, however, is to provoke questions about living more sustainably with the resources at hand here on Earth. Japanese plastic food artisans are showcasing their mouth-watering artificial creations at an exhibition in Japan's capital city, Tokyo. From the Leaning Tower of Pizza to fish slicing and cooking, or even the quirky stacked pancakes, you can find almost everything at the exhibit. Other sculptures, including a deep-fried shrimp with four breaded legs scaling a mountain of shredded cabbage like a tiger. Another creation on display is a Tetris game made of chicken. Plastic food artists get really excited for the exhibition each year as they are given a chance to practice their own spin on creativity, bringing food to life with curious characters.
So normally we have to follow orders from clients. We take their views on board when we're making items. Normally that's our work. But for the competition, you can use your imagination. How it finally ends up is totally up to you. I like that aspect of it.
There are some 60 sculptors on display. Some are silly, but others highlight the artist's skills. The models were made with the same careful detail as the rock-solid noodle soups and crispy-looking plastic snacks on display outside Japanese restaurants. There is a lucrative business for them in Japan.
The forest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Donggu Forest Park is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of the Xialinge River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in the area was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works.
Whilst not being as painful as a broken limb, animals like humans suffer from chronic and acute pain from gum infections, broken teeth, and bacterial spread through the circulation. A 16-year-old elephant in Pakistan is one such case. Madhubala, suffering for years from a dental infection caused by a broken tusk, has finally got relief thanks to vets, dentists. Named after a legendary Indian actress, Madhubala's eyes were taped shut, her legs tied to support her during sedation and subsequent treatment at a Karachi zoo. The vets had to use drills and other heavy surgical tools to extract the infected tusk. She is one of four African elephants being treated in Karachi by an eight-member team from Global Animal Welfare Group, Four Paws. A Pakistani court last year asked Four Paws to assess the health of the animals after local animal rights activists raised concerns about their well-being. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Lightning strikes are very powerful and misunderstood force of nature that we all often see being used in films. A spectacular lightning strike has illuminated the sky over the Scottish town of Dundee. A video from an eyewitness that captured the hypnotic scene has been shared on several social media platforms. The lightning in the clip can be seen sending several bolts in opposite directions. Below, a church spire is silhouetted against the lightning flashes. But lightning is not always spectacular, as sometimes it causes fire to tower and high rises. Last month, a wind turbine caught fire after being struck by a lightning bolt in North Texas, United States.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice, and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
It's Stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colors against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth. Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinan County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Google, one of the largest and most influential organizations in the modern world, is filled with ex-CIA agents. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Alan McLeod, journalist. This article is published under the heading National Security Search Engine. Google's ranks are filled with CIA agents. Here's the story. Google, one of the largest and most influential organizations in the modern world, is filled with ex-CIA agents. Studying employment websites and databases, MinPress has ascertained that the Silicon Valley giant has recently hired dozens of professionals from the Central Intelligence Agency in recent years. Moreover, an inordinate numbers of these recruits work in highly politically sensitive fields, wielding considerable control over how its products work and what the world sees on its screens and its search results. Chief amongst these is the Trust and Safety Department, whose staff, in the words of then-Google Trust and Safety Vice President Christy Cangallo, decide what content is allowed on our platform. In other words, setting the rules of internet, determining what billions see and what they do not see. Before Google, Cangallo had been President Obama's deputy White House chief of staff for implementation and is currently chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security. Many of the team helping Cangallo make calls on what content should be allowed in Google searches and on platforms like YouTube were former CIA employees. For example, Jacqueline Lepore spent more than 10 years at the CIA, where she served as a leading U.S. government expert on security challenges in South Asia and the West Asia region and go-to writer of quickly needed papers for the U.S. president. She joined Google in 2017 and is currently a senior intelligence collection and trust safety manager. Between 2010 and 2015, Jeff Lazarus was an economic and political analyst for the CIA. In 2017, he was hired as a policy advisor for trust and safety at Google, where he worked on suppressing extremist content. He moved to Apple in 2021. Ryan Foggett spent 8 years as a CIA officer. Then in 2019, Google convinced him to leave and become a senior manager of trust and safety. As a director of trust and safety, Brian Weisbard led teams that adjudicated the most sensitive YouTube trust and safety escalations globally and enforced the most urgent and highest priority misinformation and sensitive content decisions. Between 2006 and 2010, he was an intelligence officer with the CIA. He's now a director at Facebook. Like Lepore and Lazarus, Nick Roseman concentrated on Iraq while he was a CIA analyst. Since January, he has been a senior manager in Google's Trust and Safety Division. Jacob Barrett, Google's global lead for safe browsing operations, was an analytic lead and open source officer at the CIA between 2007 and 2013. and a 12-year CIA political and leadership analyst, Michelle Tvorovsky, left the agency in 2019 to take a job as the intelligence analyst lead in trust and safety at YouTube.